Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 78. The original series, season 2, episode 26. Assignment, Earth.
Captain Kirk, my name is Gary Seven. I am a human being from the 20th century. I was on my way...
Humans of the 20th century do not go beaming around the galaxy, Mr. Seven.
I've been living on another planet, far more advanced. I was beaming to Earth when you intercepted me.
The location of that planet?
I wish their existence kept secret. Even in your time, it will remain unknown.
It's impossible to hide a whole planet.
It's impossible for you, not for them. Captain Kirk, I am of this time period. You are not. You interfere with me, with what I have to do down there. And you'll change history. You'll destroy the Earth. And probably yourselves, too.
If what he says is true, Captain, every second we delay him could be dangerous.
And if he's lying?
This is the most critical period in Earth's history. The planet I'm from wants to help Earth survive.
What if it turns out you're an invading alien from the future?
A most difficult decision, Captain.
All right. Well, what we can do is we can just... We can start the process.
Let's just go for it.
We'll start the process of beginning the podcast.
We're just going to go for it.
We're just going to jump right in.
Yeah.
People are fans of...
We're going to use the light speed breakaway factor.
Jumping right in. If you do a Twitter poll and you have two options, and one option is jump right in and the other option is dilly dally, 100% of people are going to pick jump right in.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
That's what they want.
That's what they want. That's what the people want.
People can dilly dally on their own time.
Exactly. They don't need to hire us.
We don't need to provide the dilly dally
on their behalf. We needn't be proxy dilly dalliers or dilly dally whackers, whatever the term is. I don't know what the
dilly dally
whacker might mean something else.
Yeah,
the professional sweet. Term for uh-huh. that. But all right, so since we're jumping right in, as usual, we're jumping straight into it. And this week we are going to be discussing the original series episode. Assignment Earth.
Assignment Earth.
It's season 2, episode 26.
Episode 26.
And the last of the season.
The last of the season. And
they get canceled.
They were canceled, and they were expecting to be. So I think one thing that's interesting about this episode is there's not a lot of sort of thematic elements or morals, really, that I mean, maybe I missed it. You guys let me know if
I don't think so.
I missed it. It was more just a cracking story.
Yeah.
And it was potentially the last episode of Star Trek ever.
And they were trying to do a crazy spinoff with this Gary Seven guy.
Seven.
Possibly Terry Garr.
The whole background, I like this episode. I think it's actually a pretty great episode in a lot of ways, but in all ways, frankly. I thought it was a pretty cool episode, but it's got this weird thing going on because of the background to why this story even exists. I guess Roddenberry wrote this as a pilot because he knew the writing was on the wall with Star Trek, right?
Right.
Or figured it
so was. He was like, let's have a guy with works with aliens and have this young, hip
and especially
Hollywood's version of the counterculture.
It's like, let's have a job that I can keep earning money at.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to do it.
Yeah. And
because if you think about it, like this is the kind of show that might have worked in the future from the 1960s, sometime after 1968.
In the real future.
After Star Trek is set in and people actually like Star Trek and are just into science fiction on normal television.
Mm-hmm. It's a very Roddenberry story when you think about it in terms of whether he's a human or an alien, either way, there's this alien influence and it's seemingly benevolent, at least insofar as we can tell in this story. That seems to me is kind of a Roddenberry style thing, an inversion of what the common thing at the time was, which was alien invaders coming to get you. Whereas this was some fella who was being sent across space in order to help you out.
It is kind of time copy.
Right.
Kind of. He's like, as in Time Cops. Like it sort of
space time
sets now. The stage for future developments in Star Trek with the whole time cop kind of setup.
What does a man in 20th century garb doing?
But that's weird. Like he's from the 20th century. He just grew up on another planet.
Because
they took some humans and they put him on this planet.
You've never heard of, or I have.
And you won't hear about it in the future.
You won't hear about it either.
And I've got a girlfriend in Canada.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For real, I swear. That's why you don't ever meet her.
She lives in British Columbia.
Actually, it's Alberta. She lives in Alberta.
My bad.
Yeah.
Not Saskatoon.
Is it Edmonton?
Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. The Gary Seven thing is an intriguing concept, it's a very Roddenberry concept, and a very 60s concept, I'd say, this sort of rugged, sexy guy coming through time.
Okay. He's got a funny little gadget.
He's got his funny gadget.
It's a little Doctor Who-esque.
He's got his funny cat.
It was
cat.
Very Doctor Who. Yeah. It was like...
Maybe this was like this was sort of like two Doctor Who to work as a TV show. At
yeah,
the time.
It was Man, the yeah. servo
and the cat, of course, Isis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess why I keep coming back to the whole production background is that if you just look at this as a Star Trek episode, it's somewhat peculiar because first of all, there's the whole episode takes place in the 60s. They start in the 60s, they end in the 60s. Captain Kirk is all like talking about time travel like it's just some shit they do.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's why he has all those time
violations. The beginning's hilarious. It's like, we've traveled back in time to the 20th century to the year.
Kirk's got all them time violations.
It's like, oh shit, you did what?
Yeah. And it's so matter of fact. He's like, oh, it's just a historical mission. We're just checking shit out.
High speed breakaway
vector. Historians.
Yeah, which they then, of course, apply this technique to in Star Trek IV,
right?
In order to travel back in time.
Because apparently they're just really good at it.
Like, yeah, they're just...
Yeah, right?
1968, 1980, anywhere. Whatever the fuck. What was that supposed to be? 86, 84?
86, I believe.
Yeah.
As a Star Trek episode, it is peculiar, right? It's a bit of an odd bird. It's not a straight-up comedic episode.
It's mostly a Gary Seven episode.
Exactly. It's a Gary Seven episode with Captain Kirk bookends here and there. You get to see Captain Kirk and Spock wearing those crazy trench coats.
And the hat.
Walking around.
Oh, various hats.
Dude, the hat. Quote-unquote
Manhattan.
The first hat.
They change outfits when they're in New York and then in Florida. They're the lighter outfits.
They got like a Florida outfit.
He's got like the Spock's Florida.
No, sort of like Panama hat.
Spock has a fishing hat and I kept laughing out loud at that.
Yeah.
Every time I saw him wearing that weird like fishing hat.
Made it over the top.
Yeah, it was like he was looking like Gilligan.
But he's got that Spock like face he's making all the time. He's just like out from underneath.
It's crazy.
Gilligan.
But so you've got this story, and when you understand that it was originally its own story, and then Roddenberry, the networks weren't interested in it, so Roddenberry then wrote it into a Star Trek episode as sort of a backdoor pilot, which unfortunately also didn't end up going anywhere, right? Then the story makes a lot more sense, and I actually find it more enjoyable to understand that because it helps smooth over a few of the little rough edges there where the some of the directing style, this is directed by, I think, Mark Daniels or something, a guy, a fellow who's directed tons of TOS, but it felt very I Dream of Genie-esque in some of the camera angles and just sort of the style of the humor was whimsical.
The creepy Manhattan apartment is where I guess like the Lucy show is supposed to take place.
Yeah, at least the same street address.
You find a Man from U.N.C.L.E.
What was it? East 68th Street or something like that?
Yeah, it's East 68th Street.
Oh, snap.
Swanky part of town.
So like when that came on in the 60s, people were actually getting all those references.
Presumably, yeah.
Presumably. Mm-hmm. If you watched a ton of TV.
Of course, TOS was produced by Desilu.
If you weren't in Vietnam.
Lucille Ball is the reason why Star Trek exists, basically. She was
It's Lucy.
Yeah, it was all her. So,
that's right.
A bit of a call out.
That's why they were doing that as kind of an homage.
Although the show did not end up becoming its own show, like the spinoff didn't end up happening, I did hear from a fellow on Twitter, at PGTips85. I don't know what that means, but that's
a brand of tea.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like one of the biggest brands of tea.
Perhaps
this
fellow's from England, but he was very he was very nice because we had posted a social media message at It's Got Star Trek, indicating that we'd be watching Assignment Earth, and he said this is one of my favorite episodes, and he's read the accompanying comics and books. So I asked him about those because I wasn't fully aware of that stuff, and he said that the Assignment Eternity is really good. And he also noted that there's a whole bunch of Eugenic Wars novels that incorporate Gary Seven into that storyline, as well as I think Roberta and Isis, I think, are all involved in that stuff.
Yeah, they're in it, I guess, and it talks all about them and Khan.
Did you know there were some weird coincidences associated with this show? I mean, not that weird.
Or are we talking about like the historic ones?
Yeah. Or? What you want to go for it, Jimmy?
Oh well, I found it interesting how it was aired, and then it's an important assassination happens. And 4 days later, Martin Luther King Jr. Right. is assassinated.
Yeah.
Yep, just a few days later. And on the same day, on the same day, Apollo 6 was launched.
Right.
At the same day as the assassination.
Mistake.
And that veered off, of course. Now, the rest of it,
They used Apollo 4. That was Apollo 4.
Yeah, because I think at the time, Apollo 4 was the only one that had launched.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, or at least that they had access to.
That was, right. was the only
NASA
manned.
Gave him all that footage from the Saturn V.
I will say that this was a stock footage palooza.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
Because it was not only stock footage of the rocket that you kind of kept seeing a lot of that.
Like
that
you've seen like your entire life.
You get like a ton of Cape Canaveral. Fort McKinley.
And also like the New York, like there's a bunch of New York stuff that was clearly just stock footage.
Yeah.
And it was odd because, the stock footage never quite matched up exactly with the regular. I mean, I know I'm not complaining about it. It's just kind of, it's funny because you didn't see so much of this in Star Trek before, even in some other episodes where they went back in time. Of course, they had a little thing here or there.
It's all sets.
Yeah. They relied more on sets and matte painting.
They used the same old like urban set that they tended to use. At least that's what it seemed like.
Classic. At least like their clothes were cool when they went down.
Yeah.
People had some killer threads.
Yeah, man.
And I love Spock's hats.
But Gary Seven was the sharpest.
Yeah.
He was a sharp, sexy, rugged man.
Terry Garr had a crazy ass outfit on.
Oh, too, dude. But
weird tights with a line.
Reading something is like, but at the time, all that kind of psychedelic for dress was pretty commonplace, actually.
Yeah. Crazy colors. Like,
That was the colors. It wasn't as psychedelic, like out there as like they want you to think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Terry Garr, of course, she played Roberta Lincoln. People know her from MASH. She was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. She was in that movie, Oh God! !
I have not, but I have it on my DVD.
She's in Tootsie.
She was in Batman Beyond as a voice. She was in one episode of King of the Hill, Bill of Sales. I think she played Peggy's, like the person in the scam above Peggy.
She was in Young Frankenstein. Young Frankenstein,
yeah.
Tootsie. She was on Friends, Phoebe's mom.
Well, and Robert Lansing played Gary Seven, and he's a fellow who's, I don't know if people will be familiar with him, but he was on a lot of stuff back in the day, like 12 O'Clock High and Daniel Boone.
Oh yeah,
he was on Branded, The Virginian, Mod Squad. Bonanza. He did a couple episodes. Simon and Simon. I think The Equalizer was one of the more like the later things that he did was a little bit more familiar. You also might know him from Under the Yum Yum Tree.
I read that he was in that movie. Who's in that? Jack Lemmon?
I can't remember.
Somebody like that.
I just the title confused and delighted me. The title.
Yeah.
So I just figured, why not? I'll go for it.
Somebody set us straight on that one.
Yeah. You know, Spock really digs that cat.
Yeah, that was funny. He was like
that's where the meme comes from. I was like, there's the meme right there.
And he's just
stroking that cat.
Change form into a female woman type?
Yeah, I was wondering about like he had some sixth sense and Spock thought he was getting away with something.
He was like, I'm quite enjoying myself.
Spock knows what's up.
This is a lovely creature.
That guy knows
what's up. Right?
Yeah, we're beating around the bush a little bit, but Gary Seven shows up because I guess he's being beamed to Earth from far away. He won't tell us where.
The planet.
And somehow that gets interrupted by the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit weird, but it works for the plot.
He didn't expect him to be there, I guess.
And I guess it's the first indicator that he's not like some piece of shit asshole is that when they capture him, he does try to escape, but he doesn't like, try to kill them immediately.
Right,
or whatever.
He puts them to sleep.
And then he ends up getting captured and he gets put in the brig. So he gets out, he's captured and then he escapes from the Nice Guard and then, manages to beam down and start his
down
business.
Down to New York.
He's down in New York. And then we're introduced to Terry Garr's character.
He's like, this is a shithole.
Yeah, I know. He's like, can't stand this place. He's like, thank God I won't have to be here long.
It's so primitive.
Which is obviously a joke to the idea that they wanted to make a whole TV show with him to run for 10 seasons.
It's your assignment, dude.
They want to do like 70 episodes a year. But we then get our introduction to Terry Garr, and they play that Star Trek clown music. You know, like
Yeah, the music was all goofy.
It was super goofy, and it was a little bit confusing what they were trying to characterize her as, because like half the time it was as some sort of like bumbling buffoon. And, but on the other hand, she's known as a comic.
Right.
She's super smart.
The Beta Phi was like, she possesses intelligence.
Yes. It was like Gary Seven's like, holy shit, a woman with intelligence?
Yeah, right.
But this is the 60s.
We can't do that. This is the 1960s.
But it was like, Hollywood's portrayal of the counterculture was driving me nuts in this episode.
It's always funny. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
it's like, come on, guys. Like,
it is a reminder that Star Trek is ultimately produced by, quote unquote, the man.
The suits.
Right?
She's all helping out the CIA.
Roddenberry had really...
Oh, yeah, but she's like, I'm the CIA, and she goes, groovy.
Yeah, groovy. She looks at his ID. His ID totally passes as groovy.
She's like, I want to help the government.
Groovy.
It's not a fake.
I want to help the CIA. Totally.
Right.
But I don't know. It's
not a bummer, man.
Roddenberry had plenty of what we would consider very, very interesting and progressive views. He came up with a lot of ideas. Some people have based their lives around some of the ideas that he's come up with in terms of, you know, peace and harmony and communication and all that. All that's correct. But you know, he was not a perfect gentleman by any means.
No,
he was an old guy,
and he was an old guy, and he was. Particularly as the seasons went along, more and more willing to compromise. I mean, he compromised right from the beginning. He wrote The Cage, showed it to the network, and they were like, oh, this is too smart.
Too cerebral.
This is too, yeah. I don't know, this is going to scare people.
This is like 40 years ahead of its
time. You've got a lady in charge. Yeah. they're going to go crazy at home. So, but they let him do another pilot, and so he made compromises. Now that got us Star Trek on the air, got us Captain Kirk and all that, you know, so, you know, whatever will be, que sera, sera, and all that in, you know, the whatchamacallit episode we did the other week recently with the space hippies.
Oh, yeah, with Charles
Way to Eden.
Yeah, the Way to Eden, right?
Yeah,
that's another example of, we
brother. Enjoy,
it's an enjoyable brother. Episode because it's
hey,
so
man,
goofy.
Hey, man, do you play, brother?
Yeah.
But it's insane. That's like what people think the hippies were doing. So there's more of that in this episode. But it's not as much of a problem, again, I think partly because it's all this Gary Seven stuff. It's taking place in 1968, one of the most tumultuous years in U.S. history, though they wouldn't necessarily know that at this point because this aired in March,
right?
Late March.
Yeah. There should have been more sirens in New York City at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. More loud sounds.
Yeah. But, you know, they mention that. They talk about, you know, this is a crazy time in U.S. history, and that's why we're coming back, and and it was odd how, I forget exactly how Kirk phrased it, but it was something along the lines of, we're trying to figure out how the fuck these people, like, didn't
they
kill themselves.
It. Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, right. It was actually because we had something to do with it.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, we teamed up with this, supervisor, not 194, I think it was,
yeah.
Supervisor 194. Gary Seven.
And his funny
Gary
sidekick.
And his funny sidekick, Isis, which we'll get to in a second, and his funny computer sidekick, Beta 5. Computer Beta on!
Five. And that other sidekick.
I am Beta 5.
Back at the office.
Yeah, Roberta.
Roberta Lincoln.
Roberta became his sidekick, / kidnap victim.
Yeah,
right.
It's a little...
It was an odd relationship.
It's a little Manson-y.
What was odd was, Spock trying to, like, shut her up when the cops were... The cops from the 1930s dress.
He totally put his hand on her mouth, man.
He put his hand in her mouth?
Over her mouth.
That whole outfit of the cops? What the fuck was that?
It was Keystone Cops.
Yeah.
It was straight up Keystone Cops. They were wearing like Keystone Cop outfits, and then they did some Keystone Cop shit where they got beamed up to the Enterprise, and they're all like, what do you say?
Like,
it was like G. Willikers or something.
Yeah, G. Willikers.
I forget what he said.
He totally said something like that.
I don't think it was G. Willikers. I wish I should have written that down, but he exclaimed some, not even 1960s phrase. It was like a 1940s ridiculous cop phrase. Something along those lines. And then they beam back down, and he was like, whoa, would you look at that? It was bizarre. But that fight was funny because the first thing I thought is like, why is Spock having so much trouble? I thought, you know, Vulcans are all super strong.
Right.
Right. You know, so that was a bit of an odd thing. Maybe they were just getting lazy towards the
Vulcan net pinch did not work.
That didn't work on Gary Seven. And that I think has only happened a few times before. I believe he tried it on Khan.
Yeah.
In Space Seed, I think. Yeah. I think it was in Space Seed, not in Wrath of Khan. They never meet in Wrath of Khan. But in Space Seed, I believe he tries to do that and it doesn't work.
Right.
Khan.
Or it kind of almost works, but then Khan is like, I'm superior.
Right. It's like when the Jedi stuff doesn't work on some people. They're like, oh, you're trying to do that Jedi stuff on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That doesn't work.
But
You got to be Jabba the Hutt.
So earlier I said there was no thematic message or moral. I guess that's not technically true if you take into account this whole idea of
nuclear arms race sucks.
But what they're saying is not particularly that interesting. And again, that could be a bias from the future. Maybe at the time it was very groundbreaking for them to talk about this. I tried to look around. I didn't see anything that indicated that so much that it was a particularly unique message to say that, maybe we shouldn't all blow each other up and we're all terrified.
Right.
Yeah. I think they were learning that in the 1950s when you started making the hydrogen bomb and you're blowing up like the Bikini Atoll. Mm.
Because the 50s was when people were more scared, I think.
The 50s was the nuclear age of being frightened as fuck.
Yeah.
If you hide under this desk and a nuclear weapon goes off, you'll be fine, Billy.
No, you won't. You'll totally be fried, Billy. In fact, it might even be worse. You might be half alive. Turn into one of those horrible zombie people.
Into the wall.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not trying to disparage the message of this. I totally 100% agree with the message. It wasn't as interesting as a lot of Star Trek episodes can get to. And in fact, often the mistake, and we've had this critique in the past a couple of times, is when an episode tries to do too many things and has too many morals and messages, and they don't have enough time to really fully develop any individual one. That's happened a couple times. In fact, that was in The Way to Eden. That, I think, is one of the flaws of that episode. They're trying to tell too many little moral tales.
Right. And keep it simple, brother.
Yeah, and some of them contradict. You know, it just makes it makes it a little bit tricky. Both Kirk and Spock have trouble with Roberta. Which is, I guess it works for the drama and tension. It's one of those things that you're sort of like, come on, Spock. I mean, it's not like he's not manhandling her. He's awkwardly and weirdly manhandling her.
It was really odd scene.
And then he like sort of tosses her to Kirk.
They toss her back and forth.
He's kind of like dealing with her, and he's like, I don't want to deal with her anymore. I'm going to toss her to Captain Kirk.
Yeah. Maybe that was supposed to be a slightly sort of slapstick move. I don't know.
Right. Supposed to be comedic.
But I will say, I do think it's a pretty well-written episode. I think the dialogue is interesting. I think they use a couple of clever devices, given that so much of this focuses on Gary Seven et al. And this is a whole new concept and character for the audience. They employ some good tricks. Like I enjoyed that when he first gets to the Beta 5 computer, the Beta 5 computer is giving him shit about his identity and asking him all these questions, which was both funny from the modern perspective of dealing with having to click the password, human verification boxes and all that nonsense.
Pick up the traffic light.
But it also was, I'm saying it's clever, maybe people don't think it's that clever, but Beta 5 basically said, please state the nature of your fucking job for proof of who you are. And then it allowed Gary Seven to just be sitting alone in a room revealing expository text, right? Exposition. Yeah. It's just a long paragraph of exposition that he's just leaning on a desk and being like, well, you see, the thing is, this is my deal.
And you don't see in Star Trek, people don't typically argue with the computer or this. Mm-hmm. The computer doesn't have an attitude. That's kind of more like a Star Wars thing, maybe.
Right. And he even says, I hate like a smart alecky.
Yeah, right. Lie. He's all talking back. He's like, I like other computers better than you.
It's sort of almost Data-like, almost like some people like Dr. Pulaski interacting with Data and getting annoyed with that. And this concept is similar to what Roddenberry did later, which was the Questor tapes, which I'm not super familiar with, but my understanding is it's a similar idea in terms of, I think in that case, it's a robot or android sent from some aliens to help humans. So it's kind of like Gary Seven sent to help the humans. There's androids.
So he was really fixated on that idea.
Yeah. And it evolved over. Yeah. That particular idea. And then the android idea, I think Questor is sort of a proto Data in some ways. It was more fleshed out, obviously, in TNG, but I've got to check out some of that Questor tape stuff because I'm not super familiar with it. Anyway, it's just another, you watch these older episodes of TOS and they have have merit in their own right. But then just as a Star Trek fan, it's always fun to see the less obvious influences that are important later on in the series. Because we all know, you know, the Klingons and the Vulcans and this and that, where there's a lot of lore and all that. But this is an example, like the obnoxious robot that's being too literal about shit and somebody's just not being able to deal with it. That's something we do see later with Pulaski and Data and other couple examples. So that's just a fun thing. It's added value to going and watching some of these TOS episodes, even some of the ones that aren't considered that great. Now, I think this one is high atop many people's lists, even though it is a little bit awkward and weird, perhaps because it's a little bit awkward and weird. And we haven't even talked about the whole Isis the cat thing yet.
We've talked about Spock's goofy hat, but not Isis the cat.
Yeah, well, he had two goofy hats.
Right.
So we could do another Dan thing here, which is we could rank the top 10 cute cat moments. Starting with number 5 for some reason. So I will say number 5 is when Spock is petting the cat.
What about when the cat, when Gary is out on the... He's up on the rocket and the cat just kind of crawls from out of nowhere.
See, that's number 1.
Yeah, that would be number 1.
Yeah, that was cute. It was all like on top of him, like, "Oh, I love you."
Every cat owner or person who's had extensive experience with a cat understands lying down and having a cat walk on your back while you're trying to sabotage a nuclear warhead.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's dealt with that at one point or another.
I guess they used 3 different cats.
Yeah, there were a few, 3 different cats all playing Isis. Cats. They all had the same collar on.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple other things with the cat. There were some shots in this episode that I was just very impressed with, like when Gary Seven is escaping from Kirk and Spock, because as we just said, they were in the middle of manhandling Roberta, and Gary Seven seemed to have been perfectly happy.
He's like, "I'm out of here."
He's like, "This is great. I can take my time dialing in where I need to be on this machine.
Thanks to this broad, I can escape."
And he's like listening out. He's like, is she still being accosted by those strange men? Yes, she is. Okay, good. Let me push some more buttons. But when he transports to the Air Force base and the doors open up and he's just standing there like with his cat. And I thought that was like a really cool shot and how he walks out all sort of smoothly. And then some people start walking around. He's just like, "Oh, hey." And he walks over to, it looks like a taco cart or something. Yeah. I don't know if it was an ice cream cart or something like that. Just walking around with a cat. And then he encounters another Keystone cop.
Yeah.
Although this time he's a
security guard,
like, military security guard. Put your cat down.
Yeah, a guy walks up, a sexy tall man with a cat walks up, and the guy's all like,
"Put your cat down.
All you gotta do is put the cat down." Just put the cat down.
And I guess he showed him one of his IDs.
Yeah.
National Security.
Yes, maybe it was the NSA one.
Yeah, it was the NSA one.
Yeah, that was a different one. And then he did that ray gun thing that makes the guys have orgasms.
The servo.
Yeah. It makes people have orgasms.
Right.
That's what it does, right?
That dude's face was so overacting.
All those dudes, whenever he left the room, those dudes all had smiles on their face and pie-eyed expressions.
Pie-eyed.
That's an expression. So again, they talk about Terry Garr's character, Roberta. You know, she has a high intelligence. They don't do a lot to try to demonstrate that. She seems to have a certain amount of gumption and bravery, which maybe in the 1960s that meant intelligence. It meant like, you're smart if you just if you have gumption.
She's plucky.
Yeah, if you're plucky.
She was definitely plucky.
Whatever the appropriate terms are. There was some, you know, this was more of a whimsical than a comedic episode, but they did have some good comedic moments. Because again, I didn't find the guys passing out with big smiles on their face comedic. It was whimsical. But it was not necessarily comedic. And a lot of the cat stuff, it wasn't laugh out loud funny. It was like, what an awkward situation. There's a cat on a gantry upon a man's back.
A cat on a gantry.
Isis like attacks the security guy.
Yeah.
Isis attacks.
And then
he's all like, "Oh."
And then, but there was that overt, I did laugh at the joke where when Gary Seven, right when he's first encountering Roberta, Gary Seven says, where's 347? And she's like, shrugs her shoulders. And she's like, next to 348?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a
And then he's like, line. He's like, you don't need to respond in code.
Yeah.
201 or something.
That's a dumb joke, but I laughed out fucking loud. I really did.
Yeah, no, this is good.
And a lot of it's her delivery.
She's a, yeah.
Terry Garr is
brilliant. She's got comic chops.
She does have comic chops.
That's what she was known for, I believe.
So. Yeah. Well, Gary Seven is trying to confirm her identity, and the computer Beta 5 starts reading out stuff, and she doesn't mind that it says her age. She's 20 years old.
Age 20.
Weight 120 pounds. It's like, I don't know why these aliens aren't using metric. Yeah. Maybe they're just, you know, this is very U.S.
Everybody knows basically, aliens use metric.
This is a very U.S.-centric episode, as is unfortunately usual in Star Trek, which we also talked about last week a little bit. But when it gets to her star-shaped mole, it's like she has one mole on the back of her neck and then a star-shaped mole on. And she's like, wait a minute.
That's too much information.
Which was funny, but then it made me think of sexy things. And it was a trick. It's like the way they trick you.
Where was that mole?
Where was the mole?
Is it over there?
Why was she embarrassed? Was she embarrassed because it's under her hairline? Like on her head? No.
No.
Is it on her knee?
No.
Could she have a star-shaped mole on her foot and it just embarrasses the hell out of her?
Maybe.
What we know what we're all thinking out there where the star-shaped mole is.
I know what I'm.
We might not all think the same thing, but we're thinking that
there's one of two places.
It's a small in mathematical terms. You have a set of numbers.
I think this is a 50-50 chance.
This is a constrained set of numbers. There's a very small set of data points here that could be considered. So, which I don't know if I'm supposed to think that's too risque for 1968 or not. I mean, apparently not. Star Trek did some crazy shit with women wearing not enough clothes and stuff like
right.
that.
Right. Oh yeah. Right.
And we do see that finally. I think you know we can broach this Isis topic. Right. We talked about her cat cuteness, right? On Dan's top 10, it wasn't Dan, but in honor of Dan, Dan's top 10 cute cat moments, which we provided three.
So this would not count as one of the cute cat moments?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it would. That would be like a
number
debate.
Number three or something?
Number three.
We could argue about it, but the fact that this cat inexplicably turns into a sexy woman with her boobs covered in a bib.
Yeah.
Right?
For like 10 seconds. And by the way, this gets weirder than you all might think from the on-screen stuff.
Really weird.
So this cat turns into a woman briefly. Terry Garr is all like, hey.
Hey, who is that?
And then Gary Seven all sexily and sounding exactly like Leonard Nimoy for some reason is all like, you'll find that's just my cat.
Yeah,
and then it's a cat again.
It's like another thing they're trying to set up for the show. The show's going to have some weird dynamic between Terry Garr and the cat woman. And he's like, she only sees her as a you know, she's the only one that sees her when she's in woman form or some kind of crazy hijinks. Like,
right. Maybe she's like I'm just going to reveal myself to you.
It's like the dead frog, the WD frog that like, you know, when Porky Pig sees him, he dances.
No, man.
But like when he shows it to anybody else, it's just like a rotting dead frog carcass.
I think it's always a frog.
No, it's a dead frog. I mean, it's not a dead frog because it's fucking with him. It's trolling. It's trolling Porky Pig or whoever. I know
it's not Porky Pig. It's like human guy.
It's like a human guy.
It's like a construction worker guy.
Well, there's the little guy. There's the on Tiny Toons. I think they did the same thing with the Porky Pig's nephew or whoever that was.
Yeah, something like that.
They never had it was never the children of the main characters. It was always like the niece or nephew because they didn't want to imply that the main characters have any sort of sexual lives.
Yeah, I mean Porky the Pig. Come on, I don't think he
right. Come on,
I think he was on the other team, man.
I don't care which team he was on. I think whatever his sexual preference is, he was the Ben Franklin of those fucking Looney Tunes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
he was traveling to France and having a good old time doing all sorts of foreign policy, if you know
Hell
what
yeah.
I mean. But
that's all, folks.
We have mildly diverged from the topic, but
wildly diverged,
mildly and wildly. But so the ISIS thing. So again, this makes more sense when you understand that this was supposed to be a different show and or lead into a spinoff be its own thing. So obviously they're trying to introduce this character dynamic, but they don't really set it up ahead of time other than the cat responds very well. There's something special about this cat. So, okay, I'll give it to you. But I think maybe it would have been fun if Gary Seven had made use of Isis's human form a couple times, or if we learned whether Isis was a human that could turn into a cat, or if it was a shapeshifter of some sort. Was it a founder? I mean, you know, retroactively, we can say that. So we don't know the deal. It's only for 2 seconds. And apparently the only joke about it is that Terry Garr is momentarily flustered.
Right.
I guess.
It seemed like she was jealous.
And it wasn't. Yeah, that's the other thing is was she being jealous?
She was all like,
or was
it
she,
seemed like she was jealous every time.
I want to change into this guy's cat.
He's like, I want to be this guy's petting. You know, I want him to scratch my butt.
I want to turn into a cat. And
I want to have
on
a tail. I want to have a tail and have him scratch my butt near my tail, not the
and
butt.
That's
butt,
the phrase,
you know,
we're like born.
The top. Anyway, you all
this
know
this cat tail ends where most cat tails begin.
So that's bizarre enough. What makes this even more bizarre in my book is that when I was looking up, I was like, all right, who's the actress who played this? Well, I wasn't able to get a clear answer because apparently nobody knew who this person was.
That's right, yeah.
And then they assumed it was this one actress.
They assumed it was an old Playboy playmate.
Yeah but
she
then,
was like, no, it wasn't me.
It wasn't her.
But for years they thought it was, and then finally she was like, no, that wasn't me. I don't
know
what they're talking about.
2 years ago they figured out who it was.
Okay, it was. Right. I knew it was recently. Who they figured out. I don't have the name down of who
I'm gonna
actually
get it.
Was.
April Tantro or something like that?
April Tantro?
I'm getting it.
So I know, it's like, okay, I guess she didn't get a credit in there or something.
Tantro. April Tantro.
April
Tantro. There, I'm pulling the Dan, looking up real quick.
Yeah.
Another Danism. Yeah, looking stuff up to get accurate information as opposed to just relying on our increasingly faulty memories.
People used to think it was somebody named Victoria Vetri.
Yes, she was a Playboy playmate.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Victoria Vetri.
And she also went to jail because she killed a person.
Oh, for real?
Really? Like in real life?
Yeah, dude, she was all involved with like the Phil Spector stuff. And
you mean like later on?
Yeah, dude.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
When you said that, I immediately thought it was like 1972. And she
murdered
somebody.
When you look at like her history, it like goes into the 80s or the 90s and she gets involved in some
She allegedly shot her husband.
Yes.
So that was an attempted murder. And then there was another charge later on or something.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I didn't know anything about that.
But she wasn't on Star Trek.
No, she was never on Star Trek.
Never on Star Trek.
She was on Rosemary's Baby.
Whoever it ends up, this person was a lovely woman, but it was just odd. And I guess it was to throw in a, you know, like, women get jealous immediately. And even when they're not in a romantic relationship with the person, it's like, I mean, Gary Seven is a very attractive man, but he's also the relationship starts out with him basically kidnapping her.
But he's like super old compared to Terry Garr. Man.
Well, that too. I mean, she's probably close to 20 in this. I mean, I don't know.
He's probably like 50 or something.
Or 100. Although you never know. You know, because of like all of us
Wasn't
grew up
6,000 years ago, and then they groomed the other agents and
To talk about generations of stuff or whatever. Yeah, but then on the other hand, he considered himself like a 20th century man in a way.
Right.
There's a little bit of inconsistency there.
There was some weird stuff in there.
The other thing to remember is that we are all from generations who have grown up with like the BPA plastic and all that stuff. So back in the day, back in the 60s, like a 30-year-old dude looked like this. They were all like masculine and chiseled. Yeah, they were pumping them up full of whatever the hormones they give the cows or something. I don't know.
Right.
But then they all died young. This guy.
Yes, they did.
Robert Lansing died at like 66.
They were eating
or
a bunch of steaks all the time.
Yeah.
Smoking packs of cigarettes.
That was good for those old timey kind of. Whatever, he's probably lived a hard life, man.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm pretty sure they did.
Actors burn the wick at both ends, man.
Yeah.
It is
actors burn that wick, bro.
Well, so there's a couple other kind of funny things in this episode. I know why they used the Apollo 4 footage. This is before the moon landing.
They didn't have any other footage.
Right? So this is they not only did not have any other, well, they didn't have any other footage of Apollo.
They could have
done some Mercury stuff,
Apollo,
right? But they chose the Apollo because, of course, it's what's most recent and known and in the news.
Contemporary.
People were excited. Some people were excited for the moon landing, not as many people as we're led to believe. were as excited until it happened. But that's a whole nother story and a whole nother podcast. Probably put out by the BBC.
It's got Apollo. Yeah, they did do that one.
That was a good one.
It's Apollo. It's got Saturn V.
It's like a 12 minutes to whatever. 12 minutes to Eagle Crater.
Natalie listened to that. Yeah.
So the problem, though, is that it seems ridiculous to use like a what appears to be a full stack Apollo to launch a, like a nuclear warhead into low Earth orbit.
Right? I never understood that whole thing.
That shit's for going to the moon.
It's a moon rocket.
That's for putting a bomb on the fucking moon.
It's a moon rocket. Right, it's got dude? Some Delta Delta V, man.
Put your gun platform on
that's
the moon.
That's just filled with Delta V. Squirting Delta V out the back.
Delta V is coming out of its
like
asshole.
Like you wouldn't believe. Enough Delta V to get to the moon and beyond. But, okay, so they used it to launch, you know, one MERV.
They should have used a Mercury.
Yeah, I know. It really would have made more sense. Yep. Anyway, I know. That's what we call a nerd critique. It's not an important critique. Except for when he is on the gantry, when Gary Seven's on the gantry and fiddling around with those wires, it did not look like those wires were going to survive like the jostling around at launch.
Yeah.
Those wires didn't look like they would survive the jostling around while I'm eating lunch.
Maybe it was.
Yeah.
They were just like loosely pegged into a little, you know, gingerbread board.
The breadboard.
Yeah. The breadboard was just like, beep. Put some wires.
It was like a cheap stereo or something.
Yeah. Like, just get one of those kits. The people at home won't know. They don't know what's inside a fucking rocket. Just stick some wires loosely in there. Have him be able to just access it and just
Nobody
be all like,
oh,
I'm just gonna loosely wiggle these rocket wires.
Meow.
But yeah, I just thought that the Apollo thing was a little bit overpowered.
Totally, but you get to see that thing launch up into the goes like blasting off into space and shit.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome.
But we've seen that. I mean, we've been looking at like footage of like an Apollo rocket. I mean, that's like by it. You know, that was definitely new footage at the time. But for us, like we've been seeing
but
that
for us,
our whole
old,
lives.
Man.
It's just that's
we've
just
been
stock,
seeing it since we're kids.
Stock fucking you know stuff.
Plus, we got to see
MTV and shit.
We got to see even better
right,
stuff. We saw
right MTV.
Apollo 13. I don't know if that may have been the one that went to the moon for MTV because they had that whole moon thing.
Yeah, right. Well, it was still an
Apollo, and it looked a lot like
it would have been the same.
Yeah, it was the same rocket, same
basically
style of launch.
Same paint color scheme, you know, because NASA stuck to they stuck to what they liked. What did you think about the line at the end where they're talking about like, well, Spock is like, well, we've looked at our databases for this time, and it turns out this is exactly what the fuck was supposed to happen.
It was a bit confusing.
Why they have done that before? They didn't do that before.
They didn't know that when they traveled back to 1968 to observe shit, right? Or did they? Did they know that? And they just didn't tell us because
I don't know. But it was all to set up the line that it was like, we can't tell you what's going to happen, but we can tell you that you all are going to have some interesting experiences ahead of you.
Hell of a time on your new show. You're going to get.
You're going to do 36 episodes a year. For 10 years.
Everybody's going to love it.
Everyone's going to get $100 a week, and you're going to love it. That's good, steady work for an actor. 1968.
Going to be a big star, Gary Seven.
It's going to be the biggest star in the world. You're going to live forever. You're going to live way past 66 because you will have gotten this cherry gig. But unfortunately, it didn't work out. When you think about it,
you're gonna be somebody.
I understand why Roddenberry was producing this show. He had the opportunity to change the script. Totally, that's fine. I understand why he put this episode in there in an attempt, a Hail Mary attempt to try to gain some traction for this idea. However, when you consider that the problem with his show was that it was going to get canceled because nobody's watching it, putting it on the last episode of presumably the last season of this show that's getting canceled because not enough people watch it may not be the best way to get a bunch of eyeballs and a bunch of support for this show from your fan base. Because as it turned out, the fans were willing to come out and do a letter writing campaign and get a third season, a slightly wacky and bizarre third season. But a third season, nevertheless.
It seems like that if you're doing Star Trek and it's not working, you don't write a show that's going to be even weirder than Star Trek.
Yeah,
you go back to doing westerns and military shows,
and then he had
some kind of military.
Then
show
you premiere it on Star Trek, which nobody's watching, and it's the last episode. It's like in the summer. I mean, it's not the summer; it's March.
March.
But Which is weird, by the way. Why'd the season end in March?
Yeah.
Got
Well, no, because I mean they did around this number of episodes. This is the appropriate amount anyway. Well, yeah, with the letter writing campaign, Star Trek was able to get that. But I guess in his mind, he was just like, oh, the studio executives are gonna see this. And they're gonna be like, Jesus Christ, look at that Roberta.
Look at that show.
Look at that Roberta. Look at how she gets confused by the typewriter. Because it's automatically typing because they invented voice transcription decades before.
What am I supposed to do? Before type it worked with my nose?
I know, right? And the funny part is that on my first reaction to that was like, oh, that's so funny because it's voice transcription and that's so common now. And then the next thought was like, yeah, but you know, it still doesn't 100% work. Like it's gotten better, but it's still, you're still correcting some pretty ridiculous bullshit here and there. Especially if you're trying to transcribe something for you're sending a text, and right. It doesn't do it if you're sending a text to one of your body buddies that you text with. Your body buddies, it's fine for the most part, but when you're sending a text to your mom or your boss,
yes.
That's when it like changes the words inexplicably to vulgar.
Inexplicitly.
Or some other horrible, horrible thing. So you can send in your examples of horrible mistakes you've made with vocal transcription, also known as voice transcription.
I murdered your family.
Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. That's funny because it's Jimmy says that, you know, it could be a valid threat because I'm not current, you know, I don't see my family at the moment. He could have done it remotely.
Know where they live.
He does know where they live.
I do know where you live.
He knows their weaknesses.
This could be
he knows their strength.
Really, really good plot, except done in real life, so it's all horrifying. But anyway.
He's miles away, but you never know, man.
I could just beam. I could be transported.
He's a wily one.
Inexplicably into the Enterprise and then, you know, go to 1968. This swankiest fucking apartment.
You should go to the east side.
Yeah. No, that apartment. The whole thing was.
The apartment was swanky. It was you know, top of the line. I mean, come on, the east side, mm-hmm. even in 68. Cha-ching, cha-ching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what.
And it had that fucking vault, man. I love the vault.
Yeah, I know. It's the vault with the I don't know what you call
computer.
It. Yeah. Well, it's got the computer in there, and then there's the transporty part, right?
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they didn't really name that. I mean, Kirk refers to it like, you know, a transporter thing, so maybe it's we can just assume it's equivalent. But it seems to be cooler.
It's like a portal. It's more portal.
Yeah, it's portal
because it's always there, and it's all like cool. It looks like a blue caviness. Yeah.
All right. Well, any odds and ends? I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. Because we've gone through the main parts of the episode.
I like Roberta Lincoln. She goes, I'm going to quote her. I know this world needs help. That's why some of my generation are kind of crazy and rebel.
Yeah.
You know?
You know?
Right, I wonder if we're going to be alive when we're 30.
Yeah, some of you.
That line resonated with me.
Most of you.
I enjoyed it, but it was totally like, I was like, fucking suits.
Still hanging around.
It was... I think it's more new because people think of, you know, these are people trying to make money, produce TV shows, right? That's always true. But... they aren't complete shitheads, but they're not quite fully understanding, I think, what's going on in the real world. So they've developed this sort of poetic understanding of what's going on. And I don't know, you know.
Don't trust anyone under 30 out there, kids.
We lack some... we lack some contextual information, you know, and all that about the time period. But I'd be very curious to be a young audience member and how they would interpret that, whether they would feel sort of like it was
like the height of Vietnam and all the civil.
Yeah,
totally. Well,
and especially at this stage in Star Trek.
Violence.
Yeah, because Star Trek did a bunch of really on the nose metaphors. And this is, again, we discussed previously that this is. Less so. It's a little bit more. I mean, it is on the nose in some ways, but I guess it's just sort of straightforward as opposed to some of the other ones, which it's not that some of the other metaphors that Star Trek has done aren't problematic in some ways. We don't need to go into the details, but there's a bunch of other episodes where they do stuff and they're progressive messages, but it doesn't mean they were like perfect necessarily.
Yeah. Right.
Here it's a little similar, where it's through a prism. It's still through a prism of a male dominated, a white dominated, even if they're trying to talk about things like racism and stuff occasionally. Mm-hmm. Here it's still an episode.
Everybody's still wearing suits.
Man. Everyone in this episode is white people. Like pretty much everyone.
Suits and ties,
you do see a few brief, you know, with but really
everybody's a herb.
It's white people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is fine.
You get a little bit of the ship. You get Uhura.
Yeah.
Hey, for a few seconds. You get Sulu for a few seconds. You get what's his Boner for a few seconds.
I wonder because
Boner's father.
Because look, 1960s Star Trek was not, as we just said, it's not perfect.
Now I get
but
it.
More often than not, in previous it's episodes, so awesome. they made an effort with all sorts of characters, supporting characters, and even guest star characters to have people of color, people from different backgrounds, mm-hmm. sprinkled in among the crew, and like I said, Clint Howard, doing well.
He pops up a couple of times.
He's in Star Trek a lot.
In Discovery, he was in Discovery.
Yeah, and just mm-hmm. but yeah, in Discovery. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what it was. It was Discovery.
He's like some kind of space drugs dealer.
Yeah, he gets Tilly all high. It's funny.
Kanya. This episode to me almost stood out in terms of how little minority representation there was. And I'm wondering if that is itself a function of this being a pilot episode for a new TV show where it is mostly taking place in the 60s. The one alien character or out of this world character, maybe not alien, is Gary Seven and his genderless, semi-genderless, raceless computer. So maybe, I don't know.
In Star Trek, he tried to put a bunch of minorities in space, and not a bunch, but there were a handful, more than anybody else, and nobody bought it.
Or maybe he was going for something a little bit more mainstream.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But which, again, you could argue, well, that's how you're going to fail, because, you know, don't overly try to please the mainstream, because that's not how you come up with something new and groundbreaking, you know. But, you know,
trick white people.
Yeah, you do have to trick white people. We can speak from experience. We take we as a people do take a lot of you got to really bamboozle us.
Yeah.
We're not that hard to bamboozle. That's
not
the good side.
That hard.
You bamboozle white people. We need bamboozling. Star Trek was good at that and still remains good at that, by the way. It's still pretty good at that. But yeah, I think there's a possibility that this was whitewashed somewhat in order to make it more palatable to audiences. And again, Gene Roddenberry's quest to continue being a Hollywood producer, which is perfectly reasonable given that was his job. And it's he was dealing with the environment he was dealing with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys.
Any other odds and ends, Jesse? Any thoughts?
Not really. I think we covered a lot. I don't have any real odds.
Yeah. Although I guess the one thing I would say is it was another peculiar thing in this episode is like Scotty has this reputation both in the timeline of TOS and in the future of Star Trek and among the fandom of among his many amazing skills, he is particularly adept at using the transporter. They even use this in that TNG episode, you know, when they with the relics, when they get him. He knows how to use a transporter.
Hell yeah.
Yet this motherfucker accidentally transports up these two cops, two Keystone cops we were talking about.
Yeah, that was funny.
You're
not supposed to get extra people.
I don't know.
That's always like, they always tell you two to beam the fuck up.
And he was looking all sheepish. He was all like, ooh, oh shit. Oops. And then Kurt, they're all like, oh, beam him the fuck back down.
That is a prime directive violation in the first magnitude.
Right. Well, he like tracks Seven twice.
Yeah.
With the transporter.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. Exactly. He's supposed to. So why is he beaming up Keystone cops? I don't know. It was just funny.
That was the comic
genius. Comic genius. Well, maybe we'll withhold genius. But regardless, this is it's a fun episode. It's fantastic. I think part of the reason it's fun is because it is a bit weird and odd. But mm-hmm. also, Terry Garr is great. Robert Lansing's great. The three cats that played Isis are great. The woman who played the Isis as in human form for about 2 seconds is great. So it's a fun episode. Definitely
this is
worth
one of
watching.
Those. I think this is one of those time violations that Kirk committed. according to the time cops in DS9.
Yeah, yeah. And he committed it completely casually. The one time in Star Trek that time travel is just like, we've gone back in time.
Historical
research.
Why? Do you have to save the universe? Oh, no.
We just wanted to find some stuff out. We're
mildly confused about why humans are still alive.
Did anybody tell them to do that? Or they were just like, we got nothing else.
It's so funny when it's the premise is so
hilarious.
Ridiculous when you think about it. When you're like, we don't understand why we're still alive, so let's go fucking monkey about in the past to see why. Let's be careful not to fuck anything up because we might disappear a la Marty McFly.
Historical research.
300 years. 300? 300.
Because they're in the 23.
23, yeah.
So, but anyway, and it's funny because there's a previous episode. I forget if it's season two or season one, but it's Tomorrow is Yesterday, where they also go back in time, but they go back in time to like 1969, I think.
Right.
So this is 1968, which is like the contemporaneous time, but the previous one, they went back to like the slight future.
Like 2 years in the future or something.
Right.
Oh, man, yeah. Temporal mechanics always gives me a headache.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that will do it for us this lovely evening.
1.21 gigawatts.
Yes. We wish you all 1.21 gigawatts.
It's actually pronounced gigawatts.
Yeah, I know. I would call it gigawatts too. I always got slightly annoyed at Doc Brown for saying it because it's like,
That's not real engineering.
It's like saying GIF instead of GIF. And I'm sorry, people out there. I know our audience is divided on this. It's GIF. Graphics interchange format. I don't care what the guy who invented it says. That's irrelevant. That's like saying, like, the guy who invented the word asshole says it's actually pronounced asshole. No, I don't care. I mean, I kind of think that's cool.
Remember, McCoy said Seven's a human.
Yeah, well, he's definitely human as far as we understand, you know, if we take it all for face value, but nevertheless.
He's not exactly Earthling.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think that's a fair point. So, but in the meantime, you can reach out to us via the email at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com, which we provided previously not too long ago, but we always do it here at the end.
Instagram.
You can get us on Instagram if you like, if you're into that, if you're looking at pretty pictures. The Instagram is @itsgotstartrek, which is also very similar to
our
Twitter feed, and we have a good old time on Twitter.
Do the Instagram.
Everyone loves the
Twitter, and that's also @itsgotstartrek. That's easy enough to find.
It's now Star Trek.
If you're one of them website people, and we know you're out there. I'm a fan. I admit to it. I'm not closeted in that regard. If you're a website person, you can go to our website at www.itsgotstartrek.com. And there's all sorts of fun stuff to do there, like listen to the show or organize by series. Because, you know, sometimes you're just in the mood to hear some people jabber on about TNG.
You can search by the series and you can see which episodes we've done for each series.
You can, like, click on Discovery, or you can click on Lower Decks, or you can, like...
You can be like, why did they pick those episodes?
We've covered some... Yeah, you can think of that. You can write us angry emails about shit. Whatever you want to do.
The animated series.
But that's for that's the website. You can also get us on Facebook. People seem to be hanging out on Facebook a lot, so there you go. And of course, YouTube, because there is a subset of the podcast listening audience that enjoys listening to podcasts on YouTube.
Hell yeah!
I've done it occasionally myself. I've done that through YouTube. Yeah, it felt very transgressive. So
it's like watching some music.
I get the transgressive vibe of it. You know, if you're not about having headphones in, listening on your phone.
I do it on my laptop so I can hear my
If your podcast player doesn't have the ability to cast to a media device, then you can load up the YouTube and
get that
and
technology, listen
to the podcast YouTube style while watching a static graphic image with our logo on it. What we'll do is we'll you follow us on social media, and then we'll be able to then post onto the social media. And then tell you what we're going to be talking about next week.
We'll follow you.
And then you can watch it, and then you can listen to the episode next week, and that's kind of how this whole thing works.
And then we'll watch you.
Right? Yeah.
Watch you through the computer.
Then we'll follow you and watch. Oh, and you can also like and subscribe.
Like it.
You can leave a review.
Apple Podcast.
You can do all those things. You can do Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts.
And
Apple
iTunes. Podcast.
Fuck.
And you can go on Stitcher. You know, you tell all your friends. that were available everywhere. And
friends,
religious congregation, if you happen to have a religious congregation, we welcome
yeah.
all.
Yeah, there you go.
We welcome everyone here.
Your Rotary or your
Rotary Club.
Your Lodge.
The Elk Lodge or the Moose Lodge.
Or the Masons. Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got your local Pipe Fitters Union, definitely welcome then. Those are the people you want on your side. Pipe fitters
joint fitters.
You want pipe fitters on your side in any sort of social situation. Because
they come after you with pipes and beat you. Mm-hmm.
That's why you want them on your side. Yeah. And then they can go after your enemies with pipes.
Yes.
So join your local pipe fitters union. And if you aren't a pipe fitter, just toss them some cash. Protection fee.
They can kick A's.
Yeah, they can kick A's. Anyway, all right, that will certainly do it for us this evening. Thank you, Jimmy, for joining us again.
Thank you.
We look forward to talking at the audience next week on a topic that they'll figure out by following us on social media. So, in the meantime, have a lovely evening, and we will talk to you later. Bye bye.
Would you mind telling me who that is?
That, Miss Lincoln, is simply my cat.
Your cat?